Hi all, this is Donna Slater from the north of England again. This week I'm submitting a sound-seeing tour of a boat trip which my family and I took down the River Ouse in York. The captain gave an excellent commentary, albeit the commentary was rather distorted because I think he had his microphone volume on rather high. But I think most of the commentary is intelligible, and for those of you interested in York and the UK, then I'm sure you'll enjoy this sound-seeing tour. Again, with me on the trip were my husband Matt, my two children Alex and Bethany, and my in-laws Frank and Zella. I think that's all the introduction that this one really needs. Okay, so on with the sound-seeing tour. Hope you enjoy it.
To a not what, sorry? To what?
Right.
Sorry.
Hello. Did you do concessions?
Yes.
Was it 65 plus?
Yes.
Two concessions.
Good afternoon and welcome to Royal York Boats to the Duchess for this that will be a fraction over 1 hour cruise down to Bishopthorpe. Well, we're given away at least of all our cruises, and I'm required to give you a brief safety announcement. This is just to let you know what safety equipment we have and whereabouts it can be found about the boat. Now, the River Duchess is equipped with sufficient buoyancy aids for everybody on board. These take the form of rigid orange life rafts. Those can be found to the front of the row house, and dotted around the upper deck there are life rings. All those devices can either be raised manually or will float free if necessary. In the saloon downstairs, we have firefighting equipment in the form of fire extinguishers, and in the unlikely event of any emergency, please remain calm and follow the crew's instructions. Passengers on below deck should note that windows open by sliding and can fall under the exit if necessary, and for minor injuries, we have a first aid kit located behind the bar. Thanks for your attention. If you've got any questions on river safety or any aspect of the cruise today, don't hesitate to ask any member of crew. My name's Keith. I'm your skipper. I'll be driving the boat and pointing out some of the places of interest as we go by. Looking after the bar and cafe downstairs, tying up the boat when necessary, doing the tickets, and all the other important jobs to help about the boat, there's Kirsty and Ben. Well, we've outlined what we'll do during the course of the cruise. We're heading upstream first of all towards our end of which, Andy. We'll be calling in there to see if there's anybody waiting to join us. If there are people waiting there, that should be just a case of pulling in and getting them straight on board. They should already have tickets. And in that event, I will have to repeat the safety announcement for their benefit, so if you didn't commit it all tomorrow the first time, you will get another chance then. For now, a brief stop at then, the bridge will continue on. Just a little bit, well, no, we'll do a VP's cruise, so we'll be turning around almost straight away. And this will give us time to get right the way back through the world city of York, and about 2.5 miles into the countryside around York, where we'll find Bishopthorpe Palace. Well, we'll have a look at Bishopthorpe Palace before we turn around to come back once more into York. Now, if we pick up people here at Lendle Bridge, that means we've got two pickup points on the outward leg of the journey. Consequently, when we get to the end of the cruise, we'll have two dropping off places, and the choice of which one of those you use will be entirely up to you. But I'll give you more details about that as we get towards the end of the cruise. Well, in the time being now, our Lendle Bridge landing is just through the bridge up ahead there. I'm going to put the microphone down for a few minutes, concentrate on the landing, and I'll pick up the commentary as we get underway from there, and I get that safety announcement out the way for the benefit of anybody joining us there.
Thank you.
Not just. We're on this now for a while.
Well, I hope we get there.
Oh, there and back to see how far it is. Not too worried at the moment, I don't think. Yeah, well, that's what I meant, actually. Sorry?
I'm giving my dog right there because I'm off.
That's fine.
By my old
Absolutely fine. It's a river, ooze, is that right? Ooze? Sorry? Coffee or whatever, really. Thanks.
You can have coffee here.
Thank you.
of Jensen Island, and would you like info of anything? As we get a very quick receipt with our safety announcement as we're turning round. Well, the River Duchess is equipped with sufficient buoyancy in its very own world. By staying perform of rigid orange life rafts, those can be found to the front of the wheelhouse and dotted around the upper deck below life rings. All those devices can either burn or stand your wheel or throw free if necessary. In the saloon downstairs, we have firefighting equipment in the form of fire extinguishers, and in an unlikely event of any emergency, please remain calm and follow the crew's instructions. Passengers on the road should note that windows open by sliding and can form another exit if necessary, and for minor injuries, we have a first aid kit located behind the bar. Thanks for your attention. If you've got any questions on river safety or any aspect of the cruise, don't hesitate to ask any member of crew. My name's Keith, I'm the skipper. I'll be driving the boat, pointing out some of the places of interest. I'm looking after the bar and cafe downstairs, tying up the boat when necessary during tickets. And all the other important jobs around about the boat was Kirsty, Red Bay. Well, we're turning round to head down through the city of York, some 2.5 miles into the countryside, down to Bishopthorpe, where we'll have a look at the Archbishop's Palace before we turn around and come back into York. Now that we've turned round, just up ahead of us here is perhaps the second most photographed mule in the city of York. That's Leven Bridge with the Guildhall behind it. Second in its photographic popularity only to the Minster, of course, Leven Bridge was opened in 1863. Until that time, a ferry had operated here since the Middle Ages. The last ferryman to work here was called John Leven, and he started work in 1851. After the opening of the bridge, Mr. Leven was compensated for the loss of his profession by the presentation of a horse and cart worth £25 and £15 in cash, which wasn't a bad redundancy settlement in those days. The bridge was designed by Thomas Page, perhaps more famous for being the engineer of Westminster Bridge in London. To the left of us as we come through the bridge is our boatyard, and there's been a boatyard on that site since 1834, although many buildings in the boatyard predate that by about 700 years. Our boatyard runs somewhere along the beautiful white stone building of the Guildhall. That was a Guildhall built on that site in the 1200s. That one was replaced by this one, though, built in 1448 by the City of York and the Guilds of St. Christopher and St. George. We very nearly lost the Guildhall during the Second World War in 1942 during one of the Baedeker bombing raids. Incendiary bombs were dropped on it, which totally gutted the interior of the building. Well, you can still see some signs of the fires that raged there around the windows with the scorched stonework. Those bombs, though, left the outer walls more or less intact and have enabled the City of York to undertake a clever restoration job there. In the 1950s, they restored the interior to almost its original condition, and it still houses the city's council chambers to this day. Just ahead of the boat now, there's another bridge. This is Ouse Bridge, named after the river, of course. There has been a bridge on this site since the 9th century, although this particular version of Ouse Bridge is nowhere near that age. This one was built between 1810 and 1820. Now, it is actually two bridges built side by side. If you have a look as we're passing underneath the bridge, you'll see where the two parts of it join together. They built this side of the bridge first, the northern side, that was built hard up against the narrow single track bridge which was here until then. Once they completed work on this side, then they were able to knock the old bridge down and start work on the southern side of the bridge. The reason for them doing it in two stages like that was simply because this was the only bridge crossing over the River Ouse in those days, for many miles in either direction. If they hadn't knocked the old bridge down before starting work on this one, not only would that have stopped the traffic crossing the river here in York, but it would have cut the county of Yorkshire virtually in half. That, of course, they couldn't afford to do. Just through the bridge on the left-hand side, you'll see there's a medieval-style building painted white at the top. Well, that's the King's Arms pub. Now, the King's Arms is a popular watering hole here in York in more ways than one. It's always the first building in the city to be flooded. At the height of that flood in the year 2000, this was the record-breaking flood, of course, of 17 foot 10, or over 5 metres if you prefer. The water was very nearly up to the beam halfway up the building. In lesser floods, the landlord has been known to try and keep the pub open by holding canoe parties in the main bar. Well, just opens the windows and doors and lets the canoes float in. The only reason you can get away with that is because he has learned by experience that if you have a pub by the river here in York, you do really need to have an upstairs beer cellar, if that's not too much of a contradiction in terms. comes over to our right, there's a street called Skeldergate. Skeldergate is an old Norse word, and translated it means Street of the Shieldmakers. No shieldmakers there today, of course, if there ever were. I think it's just the name of the street. Skeldergate is also the name of that bridge just up ahead of us. Skeldergate Bridge is a five-arched bridge, although only three of those arches covered over. There's an arch on either bank which serves as an underpass. Have a close look at the left-hand arch over the river as we get nearer to it. You can see that there's a split up the middle of it. That's not a structural fault. At one time, that side of the bridge used to open to allow taller ships up and down the river without lowering their masts. The last time the bridge opened was in 1971. At that time, it opened to let two inshore naval minesweepers into the city to take part in the 1900th year celebrations of the founding of York by the Romans. The winding gear for the bridge was kept in that stone building just over to the left-hand side of it. Since that time, though, the winding gear has been removed, the bridge has been sealed, so it will never open again. The motor house, as it's called, though, is open now very often during the summer holiday months as a tea rooms and cafe. In fact, that building over there on the left also used to double as the toll house, because once the bridge was opened, it was a toll bridge until the cost of building it had been recouped. On the left-hand side as we come through the bridge, there's a car park. It's a long-stay car park known as St. George's Field. The area there has been called St. George's Field since the 12th century, when the Knights Templar built a chapel there and dedicated it to St. George. Later though, the Knights Templar were outlawed by papal decree. Their lands were confiscated and the chapel was destroyed. The main though survived. Now, St. George's Field is in fact the last area of common ground here in the city of York. As such, there are still some old rights and privileges on the statute books regarding it which have never been repealed. The right to hold a travelling fair there every year at Easter time has been going on since medieval days. The ladies of York are allowed to dry their washing by tying it out in between the trees. Farmers can graze their animals there, although obviously the animals aren't going to get very fat on the tarmac these days. And the gentlemen of York are still supposed to practice their archery on that site at least once a week. Well, everybody hopes they don't choose washing day to practice, of course. Now, it was also somewhere along this left-hand bank of the river here that the ducking stool was set up in York. Well, you could win a ride on that ducking stool by being a baker of bad bread, a brewer of bad beer, a barmaid who sold short measures, or a nagging wife. A slightly longer ride could be had, of course, if you're accused of witchcraft. Anybody so accused was bound hand and foot, tied to the stool, and ducked under the water for several minutes. If they were dead when they were brought back to the surface, they were obviously innocent. All charges against them were dropped and they were given a decent Christian burial. If, on the other hand, they were still alive, well, they'd obviously been using those dark forces, and they were taken away and dried off for a bit before being burnt at the stake. To our left here is known as New Walk, although there's nothing particularly new about it. It's a tree-lined parade which was laid out in stages by the Corporation of York from 1732. New Walk is the site of Piking Well, later known as Our Lady's Well or Spring Well. Now, Piking Well was an ancient freshwater well which was rediscovered as they were building New York, and it was found to be lined with Roman stone. As the fashionable ladies and gentlemen of the late 1700s, early 1800s, paraded up and down New York, they started to drink water from the well. Some of those people even claimed that the water had healing powers. Well, that being the case, it's rather a shame that since that time they've capped the well, so we won't be able to put the claims to the test today. If we keep looking over to that left-hand bank, though, it's slightly ahead of us at the moment. Just behind the viewing platform that sticks out over the bank there, you'll see a stone building with an arched doorway and an iron gate across the front that was built to resemble a Roman ruin. It is, though, a well house which was designed for Piking Well in the 1750s by John Carr. John Carr was a local architect and twice Lord Mayor of York. He designed many buildings here in the city. He also designed Harewood House. The cost for building Piking Well, just over there on the left-hand side now, was agreed at £88.13. The corporation, though, in its wisdom, deducted £25 and gave John Carr the freedom of the city in its place. Constructed on the left-hand bank as we come towards it here. It was floated across the river on pontoons in the late January of 2001, with the river closed for 13 hours. The design is based on a humble bicycle wheel, with the upper arch being the little wheel, the 19mm steel support cables forming the spokes, and above where the hub would be is the cycling lane footpath. Well, for the best part of a century, the city had been thinking about the need for another river crossing south of Skeldergate Bridge. For many years, though, that function was performed by a ferryman who just upstream of the bridge site would row you across the river from New York to Clemenceau for just a few pence. And then in the 1950s, the army built temporary veiled bridges at this point on the river to transport men and materials from their barracks in Fulford, which is on the left-hand side, to Wavesmire on the right for the Anglewater Tube. And needless to say, Yorkshire residents found that crossing to be very useful at the time while it was available.
The new bridge, if you're talking about 24 years old. Well, 5,000.
Well, we are, of course, cruising on the ooze this afternoon, and the river ooze is some 57 miles long. That's unusual, if not unique in this country, in the fact that it has no proper mouth and no proper source. It's formed originally from the River Ure, and it becomes the Ouse 15 miles northwest of Ure, where the small Ouseville Beck joins with the Ure. This little beck has its source at Great Ouseburn. Why, though, such a small beck should give its name to a much larger river is not known. The rivers Nib, Wirth, Derwent, Aire and Don all subsequently join into the Ouse, which then itself merges with the River Trent to form the Humber. The name Ouse translates roughly from Anglo-Saxon as clear and flowing water. And just looking at it this afternoon, it might make you wonder what they were comparing it with. For all its looks, though, the Ouse is quite a clean river. There are most of the common varieties of freshwater fish living in there, and down below neighbour Lock, that's about 5 miles to the south of us, there's even talk of the salmon and the trout returning to the Ouse. And the city of York takes all its drinking water from the river. I'm sure you'll all be very glad to know, though, that if you're having a tea or coffee with us any time during your stay in York, the water is given some treatment first. And the reason for the colour of the Ouse, that's quite easy to explain. The river drains about 2,000 square miles of land within the Yorkshire Dales. Much of that land is peat-based, and as the water comes through the peat, it picks up colour and sediment which stain the water, and that's what gives the Ouse that distinctive browny colour. Time up here on the left-hand side of members of the York Motor Yacht Club. and usually about two or three dozen boats tied up along here. We will be passing the clubhouse, that's just a few hundred yards further downstream, also on the left-hand side. The Yacht Club was formed in the early 1930s by half a dozen like-minded enthusiasts. In fact, this year is the 72nd anniversary of its foundation. But if you're interested in looking at this type of boat, maybe even interested in buying one, it's worthwhile taking a trip about 3 miles down the river to Naples Marina, where there are moorings for 300 or 400 of this type of boat. If you are interested in buying one, prices start at a very reasonable £35,000 for a smallish one. From there, though, the only way is up. Depending, of course, on size, which is very important, and, of course, the amount of equipment they have on them. As you will notice, some of these are equipped with satellite navigation, just in case they get lost while they're on the river. And you could easily pay well in advance of £100,000 for one of these boats. Although it always amazes me how you pay so much money for something, and it still ends up looking like a Morphy Richard steam line. Is that just jealousy on my part? Well, once we get to the end of the row of pleasure cruises here, there's a slight gap, and then there are some more boats tied up along there. And most of those are permanently moored houseboats. Once we're to the end of the row of boats, we are into the countryside proper around York, and I'm sure you'll all be glad to know I'm not going to talk all the way down to Bishopthorpe. And put the microphone down, give your ears a rest, just let you enjoy the sights and sounds of the river as we head downstream. Whether you regard it as a threat or a promise, I'll pick up the country, one or two places where there's something to tell you about. Just over to the right of us here. Oh, the large birds when you see them out of the water like that. We seem to be getting more and more cormorants on the river. I was told by a fisherman in Scarborough the reason that the cormorants are moving up the rivers into the freshwater areas is the fact that there's not as many fish in the sea as there used to be. The cormorants are moving inland to eat the freshwater fish. just ahead of us now on the left-hand side of the river is Guildford Hall. There's been a house on that site since Norman times. In the medieval days, the house was owned by the Blackburn family. They were a wealthy family who donated some very fine stained glass panels to All Saints Church, North Street, in York. In 1644, the house was sold to a gentleman by the name of Captain Keyes. He bought it for £180. Some of his descendants remodeled it in 1754. More work was done there in the early 20th century, and the house stayed in the Keyes family until 1988 when it was sold. We're not really sure of the exact sum that it went for, but speculation is that it was certainly in excess of £1 million. A very good return on the original investment by Captain Keyes of £180. The bridge just up ahead of us now is part of the York bypass section of the A64, which connects the West Riding towns around Leeds and Bradford with the East Coast holiday resorts of Scarborough, Ridlington and so on. The bridge itself is to an American design and was built in 1975. It was the first of its type in this country. Its most radical feature lies at the top of each of its supporting columns, where shallow doors give access to sensitive measuring instruments which constantly monitor the stresses and strains imposed on the bridge by the traffic passing overhead. As we pass beneath the bridge, if you look upwards, you'll see that there are in fact two bridges here, each one carrying one of the dual carriageways of the A64. The gap between the two bridges is spanned by a strip of steel mesh. This isn't structural, it was installed a few years ago as a safety measure following the fatal accident to a workman who fell between the two bridges onto the left-hand bank here. these trees over to the right-hand side of the road now is the village of Bishopthorpe. Just ahead of us on the bend of the river is Bishopthorpe Palace. This is the official residence of the Archbishop of York. Well, we're between archbishops at the moment. The outgoing one, Dr. David Hope, has gone off to Oakley to be a vicar. The incoming one, John Centenu, well, he won't be enthroned until the beginning of October. The work for us of the archbishop is being done here in York by the Bishop of Court at the moment. Bishopthorpe's connection with the archbishop dates from 1226, when Archbishop Walter de Grey purchased the manor of Thorpe St Andrew, including the Romanesque manor overlooking the river. In 1241, he purchased adjoining land from the monks of Kirkstall Abbey. He demolished the existing house and built a new, grander manor house using some of the stone from the origin. This house was completed in 1250. It includes a chapel built onto the southern end. Since then, the palace has been added to and altered many times, most notably in the 14th, 15th, 17th and 18th centuries. Archbishop de Grey decided that when each archbishop ceased his term of office, the house should revert to the King and Chapter of York Minster, that's the governing body, and not to the monarch of the time, thus ensuring the use of the building by all subsequent archbishops. Well, just down to this side of the palace, we'll be turning round to start to head back into York. Before we set off back into York, though, we'll go back slowly past the palace, and I'll tell you a little bit more about its construction. Major additions to the building were carried out in the period 1766 to 1769 by Peter Atkinson for Archbishop Drummond. This consisted of a completely new west block which forms the front elevation of the palace. It is actually the back of the building that overlooks the river, but that's certainly the best angle to view it from our point of view, because all of the changes that have gone on there over the years are clear to be seen. We can just see the southern end of the frontage though, over there to the left of the block, with the carved stone eagle on the balustrade. The eagle represents the strength and nobility of the church. Walter de Grey's, nearest to us here is Walter de Grey's 13th century chapel. It's a private chapel and it's used daily by the archbishop, his chaplain and his staff. The building was originally a two-storey structure with a fine vaulted ceiling and a wooden roof. A second floor was added though by Archbishop Vernon Harcourt in 1835 to provide extra bedrooms for some of his 16 children. Walter de Grey's new manor house was attached to the north wall of the palace and aligned parallel with the river. All that now remains of that are the undercrofts. Built on top of that is the brick dining hall added from 1662 by Archbishop Frewy. The centrepiece of the dining hall is a fine oval window with pilasters and rustication on either side, which has heraldic devices of several former archbishops in stained glass. To the right of the dining hall are the archbishop's private apartments, these rooms being added by Archbishop John de Thoresby in 1364 to 1365. To the right of those again, under the smaller of the two brick gables, is the guardrobe tower. You can see the guardrobe sluice down there at the water's edge. Guardrobes were made obsolete by the introduction of flushing toilets. As we pass this end of the building, we can look back on the North Range. This was added in 1483 by Archbishop Rothery. It's built mainly in brick with stone facings. And between the corner of the building nearest to us and the first window, you can see traces of decorative damper work. That's darker bricks being used to pick out a pattern in interlocking diamond shapes. The palace stands in 9 acres of ground, laid out to a formal design in 1700. Well, we could of course have continued on downstream, and in about 2.5 miles we would have reached the locks and weir at Naburn. That's where the Ouse becomes tidal these days. Following that, it's another 87 miles if we were to follow the twists and turns of the river, which go through Selby, Goole and Hull, for a name change from the Ouse to the Humber. And we would reach the North Sea at Spurn Point. If we were able to go in a straight line from here though, it's no more than 50 miles to the coast, which just gives you some idea of how the river meanders its way down towards the sea. Before the middle of the 1700s, the Ouse was tidal to well up above the city of York. This created a number of problems for Yorkshire river traders because of the amount of sand and silt brought up the river by the tide. In fact, the last few miles into York were virtually unnavigable. The river authority at the time took a long, hard look at that problem and decided that perhaps a lock and weir was the answer. They chose Naburn as the place to build it. And on its completion, the lock and weir had an added bonus for Yorkshire river traders because it increased the depth of the river by about 8 foot. And that meant, of course, they could use much larger boats to ferry their cargo. As to the depth of the river now, above the lock and weir to or up above the city of York, it varies anywhere between 8 and 30 feet deep. Over to the left-hand side of the boat now, just upstream from us there, above the trees and bushes, you'll see there's a clock tower. That clock tower disguises the factory chimney of Terry's Chocolate Factory. Terry's, of course, famous for the Old Grey selection of my personal favourite, the chocolate orange. If we could get a bit closer to the tower than we can from the river, we'd be able to see that instead of numbers around the clock face, it has the words Terry's of York. It used to be that on a good day, if they were cooking chocolate over there and the wind happened to be in the right direction, we would get the delicious smell of cooking chocolate drifting across the river, anywhere between the bend of the river just ahead of us and the Millennium Bridge just around the bend. Unfortunately though, all too often the wind came from the opposite direction, and that brought it straight across one of the city's sewage works. And needless to say, you didn't need a weatherman to tell you which way the wind was blowing here in York. It's usually quite obvious. Well, Terry's is now owned by Kraft Foods, and they announced just last year that they were going to close the factory here in York and take the production of Terry's chocolates into Eastern Europe, with a loss of about 300 jobs in the city. Well, it's not only the loss of 300 jobs, though, it's the loss of a tradition that's been going on for nearly 300 years, ever since Terry opened his first sweet shop in the city in the 1730s. In fact, many of the people losing their jobs now, their ancestors have worked for Terry's over the generations. Well, the only thing that's been produced over at Terry's at the moment is the occasional batch of chocolate orange. There's just a skeleton staff there working, producing that confectionery. And those jobs will last until the end of September, when the factory will finally close its doors. We are all just wondering here in York if they've changed the name of Yorkie Bars now that they've taken that production away from the city.
Thank you.
quite a pass now over there on the left-hand side, the black painted wrought-iron gates, which mark the riverside entrance to the park. Those gates were also presented by Roundtree, this time in 1955, as a memorial in France for the courage and steadfastness of the people of York during the Second World War. The gates are believed to have been manufactured by an English craftsman in the early to middle 18th century. Joins the Ouse, the River Foss is the second and smaller of the two rivers that links the Ouse. Like the Ouse, early River Foss has played an important part in the city's history. Before drainage work was done, the River Foss formed a massive pond, which was known as the King's Fish Pool. It also formed a marsh. These not only provided fish for the city's markets, they also served as part of the defences. If you've ever walked the city walls here in York, you'll know that there are no city walls between the Airport Poston and the Red Tower, and that was simply because the marsh was considered virtually impassable. In Roman times, the River Foss was diverted to provide a moat around the Norman Castle. One of the towers of that castle stood on the mound where Clifford's Tower stands today, and within the city, the River Foss was a Viking trade route, with the Vikings setting up a fish market on its banks at the foot of modern Poston's. Covering the mouth of the River Foss is a bridge, and for obvious reasons that bridge is known as Blue Bridge. The original bridge on that site was built in 1733 to connect St George's Quay with the newly fashionable New York. That bridge was made of timber and painted blue, which started the tradition. All the bridges ever since have been painted blue. This present bridge is the sixth bridge on the site, and it dates from 1929. Coming into the old part of the city of York, the Skeldergate Bridge was built roughly along the line of the medieval city walls at the southern side of the city. As we pass through the Skeldergate Bridge, we'll be approaching the first of our landings for today, this one at King's Stay. If you've really joined us, you can feel free to leave us at either landing, whichever one is more convenient for you. I'll give you some pointers as to where each of the landings is near to help you make up your mind where you wish to leave the boat. And if you leave us at the first landing, the King's Stave landing, you'll be closest to areas around the St George's Field car park, the Castle Museum, Clifford's Tower, York Dungeons, the Jorvik Centre, Fairfax House, the Coppergate Shopping Centre and the Castle car park. Those are all closest to our King's Stave landing. If you want to know, feel free to sit tight. We'll be going straight up to Lendo Bridge just as soon as we've finished here. And if you leave us at our Lendo Bridge landing, in that case you'll be closest to areas around York Minster, the Art Gallery, the Yorkshire Museum, the National Railway Museum, the Railway Station and the main tourist information office. Well, whenever you decide to leave us today, I'd just like to thank you on behalf of York Boat for sailing with us. I hope you enjoyed your cruise on the news. Hope you found something to interest you around the world. And if you're staying in York, I hope you enjoy the rest of your stay. Just in closing, if I could ask you please to keep your seats until we're well secure. Once the boat is safely tied up and it's okay to leave, either myself or a member of the crew will let you know. Then if you could make your way to the front of the boat to leave us please, we'll find the front boarding gate. Thanks very much indeed. Thank you. boat on the right-hand side now, you'll see a brick building masked somewhat by the trees at the moment. It's not a particularly old building. It was built just a few years ago to the Mother Care chain of stores. Just recently, though, it's changed hands. And now it belongs to Clinton's Cart. They have an outlet in Coney Street. Well, I think there's nothing too unusual about that. Most towns and cities have one of those shops. Look at the roof of the building, though, in this gap over to the right now. And you'll see striding across the rich towns there, a black cat. It's not a real black cat, of course. It's a porcelain model of a cat that's put there. In fact, it's become something of a trademark for the local architect by the name of Tom Adams. He's busy trying to resurrect the 16th century tradition of putting cats on buildings in the hope that they'll ward off things like rats and mice and evil spirits. Well, we're approaching London Bridge now, and just the other side of it is our landing, and I would like to thank you once again for sailing with us, and we hope you enjoyed your cruise on the Ouse. Well, just to remind you once again, please, to keep our clear of the exit until we are well secured. Once the boat is safely tied up and it's okay to leave, either myself or a member of crew will let you know. Thanks very much indeed.
Sorry, the bridge is covered in.
What?
All right.